This is the New York State AFERD podcast entitled A through Z, Health and PE. We are your co-hosts, Drs. C and C, the true Pan-American connection. I am Clancy Seymour, and my tag team partner is the one and only Dr. Victor Ramsey.
Details highlighting our episodes, guests, contact information, publications, and other useful resources will always be included in the podcast show notes. For more information about New York State AFERD, please visit newyorkstateaferd.org or Facebook and social media handles at New York State AFERD. Let's embrace the journey, and now on to our show.
Greetings, listeners. I'm Dr. Clancy Seymour with my co-host, Dr. Victor Ramsey. Dr. Ramsey, how are you today?
I am doing well. It is 58 degrees here in Brooklyn, New York. Translated, that's 85 degrees for me. So I'm having a blast, man. The weather alone is just awesome. And I've always complained about weather, but today it's beautiful. I feel like a flower blossoming, my friend.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yes. So it makes me happy. I don't have that sad.
It's 52 here in Western New York, so we're not too far behind. And my question to you right away is, what's that in Canadian? What's that in Celsius? I don't know. We'll have to figure that out.
Sometime. Oh, boy. But no more sad. No more seasonal affective disorder for me today.
It's a nice day out, indeed. It's nice indeed. to have the warmer, milder weather. Absolutely. So welcome to the New York State AFERD Health, or A through Z Health and PE podcast, excuse me. In this episode, we have invited newly inducted health and physical education teachers from around New York State to join and discuss their early triumphs in challenges. This is truly exciting, Dr. Ramsey.
Yes,
we are honored and have such a wonderful panel of promising HPE professionals. Today, we'll be discussing the article entitled Perceptions of Pre-Service and Induction Physical Educators from the European Journal of Educational Sciences and authored by Dr. Chris Gentry and his colleagues. The focus of today's episode is to discuss the perspectives of teacher candidates regarding their induction into teaching and teaching socialization factors. Okay, folks, so having read the article and now newly inducted into the profession itself, share your thoughts. But first, please introduce yourselves to our listeners. Tell us where you teach and what grade levels you teach and perhaps what region of the state you're currently residing in. Go ahead. Who wants to begin?
And we could tag team. So once someone start, you could say, I go to whomever.
Exactly.
I guess I can start. My name is Maurice Little. I'm teaching phys ed for 3 through 8, and I'm in Western New York at the moment.
Buffalo Public Schools.
And I guess,
well done.
Buffalo Public School District, yes. I guess I'll call on Vic.
Oh, that's a good idea. Okay.
Oh, I like that. So I'm Victor. I'm Victor. That's okay. I'm Victor Ramsey. I work in the New York City Department of Education Office of School Wellness Programs. And I'm also an adjunct assistant professor at CUNY City University of New York, York College in Queens. And I'm always excited about these opportunities to meet newly inducted teachers. It's an honor for me to be here today.
Now Dr. Ramsey, thank you.
Yes.
And before we get started, we have a special guest on the podcast today. Mr. Don Tobin from downstate, a New York State AFERD member, a teacher of the year
here
in America.
Oh, that's right.
And so I will let him introduce himself in a second, but I would be remiss if I did not mention that today's episode was his idea. I believe actually, Dr. Ramsey, you were involved in our follow the leader type of tasks at the state conference in November. And Don and I got chatting and said, there's not enough time to talk about all the things we can chat about, and we need to do more. And so this was Don's brainchild, and I give him a lot of credit. And we discussed, doing some different things. And then the idea of doing this on the podcast came up. And so I give Don a lot of credit. Don, why don't you say hi to our listeners?
Hi, everyone. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Hi, I'm Don Tobin. I teach at Lakeview Elementary School in the Mayapack Central School District. I live in Westchester, but I teach in Putnam County. This is my 25th year teaching elementary physical education. I'm a former adjunct at Manhattanville College. I'm no longer there, but I was there for 13 years. I am currently on the board of directors for New York State AFERD. And like Clancy had said, I was honored that I was the 2017 New York State AFERD Teacher of the Year, 2019 Eastern District Teacher of the Year, and 2019 National Elementary Physical Education Teacher of the Year.
So wow.
That is awesome.
Martin Acumen.
And we're looking at some future teacher of the year is among us. So I'm around celebrities.
We can end
already,
the podcast
man.
With that.
I'm telling you, man. Wow.
That's impressive. Well, we're really lucky to have you, Don, and thanks for the idea.
Thank you.
We're just starting with introducing our panelists today. So I think Mo just introduced themselves, and we have a few other panelists today, newly inducted teachers into the profession over the last couple of years. So who would like to introduce?
I'm going to pass it on to Sarah.
Excellent. Hello, everyone. I'm Sarah Weinstein. I am a health and physical education teacher here in Brooklyn, New York. Right now, I teach 9 through 12. I have previously taught elementary as well, but I like to be everywhere and help everyone. So that's me. And I'm going to pass it to my girl, Alyssa, over there.
Excellent.
Hi, everyone. My name is Alyssa Taylor. I am a first-year teacher at Bushwick Campus. I teach high school 9 through 12. Definitely a transition. I've always been an elementary school girl, but I love it here.
Welcome, Alyssa.
Thank you. I'm going to pass it to Logan.
All right. Hi, everybody. I'm Logan Akins. I'm a phys ed teacher in the Syracuse area, and I work with pre-K to 2. So, I'm going to send it over to Joe.
Hey, Doc. Hi, guys. Good to be here. Can everyone hear me all right?
Yep.
Okay. My name's Joe Tulosky. I'm a PE teacher at Oak Street Elementary, located in Plattsburgh, New York. So I am in my fourth year of teaching. I coach 2 sports, varsity boys hockey and modified boys baseball. I graduated from Canisius, I believe, in 2017-18. Happy to be here, guys. Good to see you, Doc.
Yes, good to see you, Joe. Thanks for joining us. Appreciate it. Okay, I think that's all of our panelists, Dr. Ramsey.
Yes, that is awesome. I just want to have a conversation because I know that some of the our panelists here, I'm sure, have read many articles related to physical education, health and physical education. So we had one in particular, one that we talked about, perception of pre-service and induction of physical educators. So I'd like to start by asking our panelists, what are your main takeaways from this article? Anything stood out to you? Anything that was salient that you can relate to immediately? Anything? That's for anyone on the panel.
I can go real quick. I honestly was relieved a little bit in reading the article because kind of hit home for me in a few ways in my fourth year, and it kind of brought me down memory lane of just like I think a goal personally of mine is always to be a sponge and gather everything I can and to be a better PE teacher, but just it made me think about my overall philosophy. I started looking back at what I currently am doing in my unit, my curriculum, challenges I've faced over the years. It was almost like relief, as in like the challenges and experiences I've had, and the great times, by the way, that I've had to this point is shared abroad. So it was a nice eye-opening article to read.
Yeah, I would not be remiss if I didn't say also that we all had our first year. We all had our fourth year. So, and by that, I mean, us, the veterans in the room, 33 years later, here I am, and I still have that fire burning. So thank you. Thank you for sharing that. Go ahead, Alyssa. Thank you. You were on there.
Yeah, I agree. I was reading and I was like, oh, wow, they did a study and everybody feels the same way I do. My biggest takeaway, something that I've been feeling a little bit, as I'm planning throughout this year, is that the physical education training programs are very good at teaching theory. The theory of phys ed, they give us all the standards. Here's how you make a lesson plan. But the practice of teaching is just not there. And you don't really get the practice until you're in the field, which is what, student teaching is for. And I can't speak to student teaching because I was a graduate of 2020. So it was non-existent for me. But you know, it just being able to be in the classroom and practicing those theories is huge. And it's still not correlating to post-grad when you're actually in practice.
That's a great point, Alyssa, too. And the fact that, you know, that article speaks to that, right, about PEAT programs and preparation. And then you add the equation of not being able to have the limited field experiences that may exist already because of the pandemic, and it certainly exacerbates unpreparedness, if you will. So thank you for sharing that. I think Sarah wanted to add on to that. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm going to add on to both what Joe and Alyssa said. I'm going to first start by saying Alyssa and I do feel the same pain because we were in the same class together. I think we got less than 40 days in the building when we were student teaching. So it was like a taste, but it wasn't the full meal. And however, I will say the benefit of that is we then got a crash course into online learning and how to be prepared for that. And we were in the same boat with actual educators at the same time, trying to figure out how to navigate this hardship. I will talk about, though, I really also felt personally connected with the article, and it had three major points, like the preparedness and cross-curriculum, or as I see that as interdisciplinary skills. Mm-hmm. And then three, lifetime fitness. And just to agree with Joe, it's like you read the article and it's like, okay, well, how am I doing all these things? How am I exhibiting this in not only the classroom of health, but also in any environment that I'm teaching phys ed in? So it's a good opportunity to get a mirror and look at yourself and see, well, what can I do better? And how can I make my students better? And how can I make them not just learn what they're learning here in the 4 years at high school, but take that and use it for life? So
sure.
Excellent, Sarah.
Yeah.
And for our listeners too, the article really does speak to what our panelists bring to the table today, and the fact that their triumphs and challenges over the first year or two or three of teaching, right? That's what it's speaking to. So I applaud you all for sharing that. Someone else want to add?
Yeah, if I could jump in real quick. I think the first part about management really got me, because I want to say all my classes, but I have a few classes that I just feel like I don't have a great hold on. We have one in particular that we, you know, administration had to jump into, and, you know, we're trying to, you know, eradicate those problems in that class. But at the same time, I don't remember where in the article, but it was saying something about kind of like feeling that inadequate as a teacher. Are you able to get everything that you know, you're supposed to be teaching out? And it makes me kind of feel like, man, if I can't get this under control, am I a good teacher? Can I do this for the next 30 years kind of thing? So I think the management part kind of stuck to me, you know, just trying to work with some of the kids in the school. Also feel like 3 through 8 is a tough time. Like 3rd through 5th is fine, but then you start getting into puberty and then they want to act out a little bit. So I don't know. That was my takeaway from that one. That really struck me a little bit as I was reading it.
Mo, I just want you to know we were all there, man. And we were all there. And we were all there. And you get better with more practice, and you reflecting is always something that's going to help. So hang in there. I commend you, first of all. And so we were all there. We all felt that at some point.
Good point, Dr. Ramsey. Yeah. I'm sure. Yeah. Thank our you. Esteemed guest, Mr. Don Tolman, could add to that. And he does have a wonderful Twitter feed. I believe it's called PE Teaching Tips, right?
PE Insight. PE Insight.
It talks about some of these things and just little helpful reminders. And, you know, being experienced KG veteran, he is, I'm sure he can still identify with some of the comments that we're talking about so far.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. And the challenges are there 20 years, 30 years, down the line as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think all of you are making outstanding points based upon the article and what you're seeing yourself. I also read this article, and in a positive negative way, it's upsetting to know that there are shortcomings with the connection between the pre-service and being in the classroom. But it's not necessarily a bad thing that there are shortcomings, because then maybe there's a starting point where they can start to connect and fix those issues. And I know that that's a huge problem, especially during COVID, because, I mean, COVID is an incredibly different situation than what we've ever had before. But, you know, when you're doing pre-service, it's really important to get that experience in the school, whether it's just observation hours before student teaching, like a practicum, or when you're student teaching, being able to have that full experience. I mean, like some of you had said, you know, you really, I think it was Sarah, you said you had 40 days, and that's really short. That's, you're really not getting the full sense of, this is what my cooperating teacher is doing that I like, this is what I don't like, this is what I need to tweak, what I need to do. And it's an unfortunate you guys didn't really get an opportunity to get that experience.
Good point, yeah. Don, indeed. And, yeah. And you know, the literature around PEAT programs and the fact that field experiences need to be strengthened has been around, that those ideas have been around for a while. And I can't stress enough that, but you add now the pandemic to the equation. I applaud people like Alyssa and Mo for, you know, sharing their fears regarding their training, because they certainly were shorted in some ways, no question about it.
Yeah, and I want to just say, Don, you remind us that in spite of the timeline, you know, 20 years down the line, we still can have some challenges as well. It was just a matter of trying to overcome them. So, yes, thank you for sharing that.
I think Logan wants to add something. Go ahead, Logan.
Logan.
All right, yeah. I just wanted to say about the article, one of the main things for me was the environment portion that it talked about. And obviously, we're talking about, you know, pre-COVID environment, so that just kind of threw more on top of it. But for me, it was pretty telling to read about the environment and how essential it is to curriculum development. I mean, we all came out with, you know, theories that were all along the same lines, and we're all teaching vastly different curriculum. We've all got different equipment, different space, different makeup of our classes. You know, Mo has a class in eighth grade who he's having a really hard time with, and I have a kindergarten class that gives me a really hard time every day. So we're in completely different environments with completely different equipment, teaching completely different curriculum. And I think that was one of the main things for me in the article, was just how realistic it was that, yes, we all graduate with these great ideas and these things that we want to do. And like Don was saying, that's great in theory, but the fact that there are these differences is something that definitely needs to be delved into a little deeper.
That is awesome. Indeed. What I'm hearing is that, and I love how you all are making a connection of the article and its content to what you're currently doing. And many of you, I believe, said that, oh, wow, it's like, this is what I'm dealing with. How important you think applying research in physical education and health education, but how important do you think this is to our practice, and why is it important? Go ahead, Sarah. Okay.
Yep. I'll kick things off. So specifically for me, I found research was really important, not only physical education resources or health resources, but I spent a lot of time looking into how to navigate my teaching, especially with students with IEPs. So when I first started, I did have a great opportunity to be a para before I was a teacher. And I think through becoming a para, I had to learn about how to deal with students who have ADHD or students who have learning disabilities or students who are coming from a different country and don't speak the same language I do. So I think through research and through reading articles about how to better my teaching for my students, I then became a better teacher. So research is crucial. Learning is crucial. I mean, if we knew everything, we wouldn't be in school. So, you know, keep reading and keep doing. And I printed it out. Like, I'm going to use this forever. I'm going to give these to my students. So, yeah, keep the research going.
Excellence is a journey, right? Indeed. I love it, Sarah.
Thank you.
Very, your words after my heart. I love it. Well said. Anybody else want to share? Okay, well, I have a question for our panelists. Aside from the obvious, what can PEAT programs do to help newly inducted teachers into health and physical educators into the profession? I mean, let's assume that the pandemic, we are now on to the endemic, you know, knock on wood, you know, I'm not sure that will ever return to a normal that we might remember prior to the pandemic. Things have changed, right? But let's assume that we are trending back in a more traditional direction of what we've had for PE and health programs. What can PEAT programs do to make your transition better? Go ahead, Alyssa.
I would say in this first year, the most support that I have gotten is from other colleagues who are new in the program and kind of experiencing the same thing I have. Me and Sarah talked a lot in the beginning weeks of school, and then also the Department of Health and Wellness. So translating that back to the question, if there was a support system within our schools that had like a continuation of, okay, well, you graduated, let's keep the conversation going. Let's have somewhere for you to come back and ask questions to. Let's have some of our professors, and I know they have student teachers that they are visiting, but many of them are in the same neighborhood as us. Like, I have a student teacher from my school who works here. So having professors, you know, still come in and check on us in our first couple of years of school, I feel like that would be a way to support first year teachers and, you know, help us stay motivated in this first year. That's what I feel like I've received from the Office of Wellness. Like, we talked about managing classrooms. You know, when I was struggling, they came in very next day and they came and supported me, and they didn't, you know, yell at my class, but they observed and they gave me tools that I'm still using today. And getting that from our teacher training program would have been very beneficial and helped me felt more supported this first year.
I love it, Alyssa. That's fantastic. Yeah. So, you know, obviously preparation, right? But the support, the continuous support beyond, you know, beyond teacher prep, so that when you're in your first and second year, these young newly inducted teachers have the opportunity to reach out and get that support.
As Alyssa was talking, I was thinking about retention as well. That's a nice way of retaining people in the field by supporting them beyond after graduation. So that's a great point that you made here, Alyssa. Anyone else? Go ahead, Joe, and then Maurice.
Yeah, I think just to follow up with what Alyssa said, that was a great answer. And I think just to kind of continue with that is just, you know, when I graduated from Canisius, my first and second year, I really leaned on my school a lot with some experience that I faced head on. Dr. Seymour was a professor, a supervisor, a mentor of mine that I called for insight and guidance, not just with teaching, but honestly, just some life choices or challenges with coaching and maybe his thoughts and some things. So I think school and education does a great job wherever everybody went to prepare us and equip us with the tools that we need to enter the field. But I think everybody would agree, as soon as you put your foot in the door in your first year, you are faced with like a snowball of different challenges that maybe you didn't necessarily think of or you weren't ready for. And yeah, just that continuous support and, you know, just to call and lean on, I guess.
Thanks, Joe.
I don't know. I don't know if you could really teach. I'm going to go back on management. I don't know if you can really teach management too much. I guess it is, like you guys said, it's experience. And as you keep, you know, rolling in the education field. But I also think one good suggestion maybe to, I had a great practical, you know, experience. I've had elementary, high school, middle school, so I can't really complain there. But I think what might be beneficial is to switch it up a bit. So for some people in the inner city, you know, that may not be so used to being teaching in inner city schools, and then, you know, flip-flop and maybe go back to suburban, things like that. Or, you know, just to give people who've been in inner city schools to have experience in suburban, because I think that helps with management just as far as how to work with different students and how they may react to you and things of that nature.
Yeah, that's a great suggestion there, Logan. In fact, I think we've been entertaining over the years collaborating with New York City, with some colleges or universities that are upstate, to see if we could do some type of collaboration and to visit some schools in the city here. And I know we've done that with schools. I know I've supported schools in Texas, for example, bringing students up here and spending the day and mingling with students and so on and so forth. So that's a great suggestion you're making. Can I ask Don for a suggestion? And Logan, I believe you want to share something. Go ahead, please.
One of the things that I was going to say is creativity. And for me, that's something that came about with COVID. The entire 2020 school year, I was teaching in the classroom. I wasn't allowed to use my gym until, I believe it was February. So for me, going into a classroom where all of these students have to remain 3 feet apart, they have to wear masks. I had a nurse concerned with heart rates getting too high, breathing rate. So for me, that was really an aspect that was a little bit more difficult, because it's easy to build the wall when you have the wood and the nails, but what about when you've got a bunch of sticks and rope? And so that was kind of the situation that I was faced with. And I mean, it was the same thing that we all had when we were home in the spring that year, was now you're telling a student, sit in front of your computer screen and then get up and move. So it's contradicting in and of itself. So I'm figuring out, how do I make a Frisbee at home? What can I make with pipe cleaners, with paper plates, with just paper and tape? So I would say creativity is one thing that I feel like programs could definitely advance in a little bit. I mean, I feel fully prepared. I can create a game. If you give me any type of equipment, I can make a game happen. But if you give me office supplies, I'm going to struggle a little bit. And at times, that's what some of us were working with. So I think that's something that, you know, seeing what happened to school districts and to classrooms and to physical activity levels with what we went through. And like Dr. Seymour said, hopefully we're almost to the endemic portion. But you never know when something's going to happen and you're stuck in a classroom again, or you're stuck in, you know, this equipment room trying to teach a class of, you know, 8 kids at a time, because that's all you can fit. So I think creativity and just different ways to come up with different games using different types of equipment and things like that is something that would definitely be beneficial to today's teacher.
Awesome. Sir, did you have your hand up?
Go for it. Yeah, I did. So I also wanted just to add on and say, maybe they could create more realistic opportunities, not just in student teaching and not just in field observing. But in my situation, I remember for our team sports unit, my professor actually brought in a class of fourth grade, because in our building, we had a school within our school. And so we were able to utilize the after school program and have the kids come in. And it was actually the first time that a lot of my peers had one-to-one interactions with the student. And I believe that because they had that opportunity, they were able to learn more. So I would think, my opinion is getting your neighborhood community schools or your neighborhood community kids to come in and get more practice and get more hands-on practice and, you know, to have more transparent opportunities.
Awesome. Yeah. Partnerships, whether it's the field experiences or the other way around, bringing them to campus. I love that, sir. That's excellent. We also have three teacher educators in the room today. We have Mr. Don Tolman and Dr. Ramsey and myself. And when I think about PEAT programs, you know, what we can do, my former students, now colleagues and professionals, certainly very proud of all of you, including our non-Canisius grads too, but very proud of you. We're certainly well represented. But if you're my Canisius grads who remember in class, I've said many times, we could have a whole course on this topic. We could have a whole course on assessment. And, you know, the same thing applies. But you only have so much room. Same thing with the challenges that you face when the article talked about socialization, right? What you face in your organizational structure with PE and the time and the fielding and all of these other variables. The same thing applies with PE programs. We only have the room that we have in the major. So I think Sarah's point speaks nicely to just being, and Joe to some degree too, being malleable. You know, the idea that PE programs can't be rigid. We have to always be changing. There's going to be things that we might need to spend less time on because other things become more important. So that's certainly what I garner from it and from what, you know, our panelists are saying. Don, go ahead.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of things that PE programs can do. Nowadays, everybody is connected online, and the whole networking part of our profession has just absolutely exploded, especially when you mention something like Twitter. You do not need to be an expert with Twitter to see 24 hours of professional development. There is always somebody out there that's doing something better or different that will give you an idea. Even if you're not in the gymnasium yet, it is a really easy way to just hop online and watch a professional teach an activity or do a technique online or say or demonstrate something. It doesn't really take a lot of effort to do that. I also believe that in a PE program, you really need to have that connection from the outside. Alyssa, I think you were mentioning about the whole theory versus practice thing. I 100% agree with you. Having someone who is in the profession to come in either as a guest speaker or as an adjunct or something along that lines. And to push New York City Eford a bit, New York City Eford has done so much for me in my experience of my career. And I've made so many connections and I've learned so much from them. Knowing right off the bat as an undergraduate or a graduate about our professional organizations, what's offered to you. There are zones within our state association that has a mentorship, which anyway, if you're in a school district, typically as a new teacher, you're assigned a mentor. But in case you're not, if you don't have any colleagues that you can rely on, easily just going to your organization, it's worth every penny. Because again, there's people out there have been in your shoes and you can get a really solid idea from somebody else. I still do it to this day. I mean, I'm constantly on Twitter every single day, not necessarily posting, but I'll see what somebody is doing and say, oh, I didn't speak to a child like that before. That's a great idea. Or, hey, that's a wonderful visual aid that I can put in my next a Google slide that I can project to the wall. Something along those lines are really easy ways to get yourself connected.
I love it. John, fantastic stuff. And, a nice little plug to New York State Eford. Really good advice. And I hear it terms like mentoring and speaking to, you know, Alyssa's point about just a guidance, a critical friend, you know, the being able to help and support. And again, Don gives a plug to New York State Eford. So I'm going to allow him to give a plug to himself with, tell us your Twitter address so that people can find you because you're one of the best at it for sure.
Thank you. Yeah. I'm not doing this for any sort of accolades whatsoever. I love the future professionals. I've had student teachers before. I came up with a little initiative because there's a lot of people on Twitter that are doing tips or highlighting an activity. I wanted to do tips general to teaching geared primarily to pre-service or those who are just coming into the field. And so I came up with, my daughter actually helped me come up with the hashtag PE Insight. And so every week I try to post less than or up to about a minute long tip on some sort of topic. One of the topics I believe was on selling it, how you can sell something to students. One was on enthusiasm. And I try to change it up every week. And I think so far I've had a total of 8 tips, but something that is geared for people that really don't have that experience in there. You know, people should check it out and hopefully it's helpful for you.
What's your Twitter address? Is it at?
Well, Insight. Mine is PE Insight. It's at Don Tobin, but.
Oh, okay. Okay. Either
but
one.
The tip
okay.
is it's PE Insight, hashtag PE Insight.
Oh, perfect. Okay. He's teaching me because I use Twitter, but I don't use the hashtag stuff. So he's got to give me a lesson. I got to follow it myself. Awesome. I love it.
Yes. And I want to commend Sarah. She's reminding us that, yes, she's a member of AFRT, proud member of AFRT. Congrats. That's right. And talking about resources, Don, you just reminded me also, we have a zone president in New York City here who does have an Instagram account as well. So we're talking about resources as well. Coach Carano, and I dropped that in the chat for you to take a look at.
That's
so
awesome.
Yeah. Thank Coach you Carano, so much.
Mr. Carano just came up to Western New York to present at our Western Zone as our keynote at our Western Zone conference yesterday. So speaking back to, again, support.
Yes.
Collaboration, the value of New York State Eford. Don Tobin mentioned great stuff. And then Dr. Ramsey mentions Instagram, a whole other platform. Yeah.
That's not exactly
because I'm still learning.
Right. But Don also reminded me that we'll be talking about collaborating among Pete faculty, someone all the way in California who I met through our conventions, reach out and ask, hey, can you come and speak to my future professionals? So that's another way of things that higher ed could do with that. So thank you for sharing those insights, folks. I just want to give it a different feel here because I know that we always want to thrive to do well in our professions. In what way were you most prepared, this is to our panelists, in your health and physical education profession thus far? And what could be better addressed in training? In other words, currently, could be better addressed maybe to fill the gap and or to build on what you already have established? Go ahead. Sarah, you want to say? Go ahead, Sarah.
Sure, I'll go first. I was processing your whole question. My apologies. So if it's okay, I'm going to dissect your question and answer it. Sure. So the first way I was prepared for HPE or to teach HPE or be a member of this community was first, I was inspired. And, you know, I think a lot of times whenever we choose a profession, we are inspired by something or we want to do that for a reason. I would say my journey began when I was 14 and I became a lifeguard. And then I was 16 and I became a swim instructor. And I was like, all right, I like this. I like improving lives. I like saving lives. So how can I continue this journey? As I graduated high school, you know, I had to deal with the death of my father. And that kind of also helped me understand, okay, I want to be a teacher, not just to spread awareness of health and physical education, but I want to change their life so they don't have to live the life I did and miss out on time with their parent. And it's my goal in this classroom to inspire them and to change their family and to change the things that they have on their table to eat and, you know, going for a walk and stuff like that. So I also have to give my kudos to my high school teacher, Tracy Fitzpatrick at Fort Hamilton High School, because she's the one who pushed me to be a lifeguard, to be a swim instructor, to do more with my skill. And then the second part of your question was, how do I think I can get better? How I can improve myself? Well, number one, research. Number two, trial and error. Like, it's okay to make mistakes. It's really okay. And then you learn from that. And I think being comfortable to be out of your box and being comfortable to do things. So for example, here at my school, my kids had never done a Winter Olympics or a Summer Olympics. And you'd be surprised. You would think high school students would not want to create a bobsled out of two scooters, a jump rope, and a yoga mat, but they did and they loved it. So I think just trying to always inspire yourself and always trying to make a difference in your students' lives, because, you know, that's why we do the job we do. Yeah.
Awesome. That's awesome. That sounds like a workshop you might want to do there.
Yeah. I'm impressed. I'm moved indeed. And, Sarah, on a personal account, you talk about the circle of life. We all, unfortunately, sometime or another, are going to lose parents. And whether it's yesterday or several years ago, you know, it's still always something that means a lot to us. So my heart goes out to you. Your dad is probably very proud indeed watching you over you right now. So impressive indeed. So anybody else? We kind of talked about, go ahead, Alyssa, go ahead.
Oh, well, I was just going to build on what Sarah said about trial and error. And I think the one way that I was most prepared is being comfortable making mistakes, you know, and communicating with your students. I mean, I'm lucky enough to work with high schoolers. And sometimes it's like, all right, well, we're going to try this out today. And being able to practice different lessons with different groups and explain to them why we're doing certain things. That has been the most helpful thing for me. And then I think in what ways I can grow, I love talking to other teachers. And I think that seeing what other PE teachers are doing and engaging with other PE teachers, and even in, I'm in grad school. So even in my classes, sometimes I pull teachers aside, what unit are you doing? And that's how I grow. And like, how are you doing that? Or have you done this unit? I'm trying it out now. And I think that has helped me in all of my units grow and helped me to give my students the best.
Great stuff.
And I also just want to add on to that and say, it's also super important to have a very good support system. So I'm very lucky that I have Dr. Ramsey like a phone call away if I ever need him. And, you know, throughout this year, throughout my first year of actually teaching, you know, he has been there time and time again, no matter what time of day. And whether it's to just calm my fears or to inspire me to do something else, I am very grateful for his support and for his mentorship, because it does make a difference to have someone to say your feelings to that you don't work with or you didn't go to school with, but someone that has the knowledge to help direct you. Yeah.
Impressive, Sarah. You're in great hands with Dr. Ramsey. And I would add that you now have the New York State AFERD Fellowship as well to support you. Mr. Tulaski, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention real quick, I hope I'm not getting too far away from answering the question, but Alyssa made a good point about just a support system. And I teach 3 through 5. We have 9 PE teachers in our district. I've reached out to them plenty of times for new ideas on how to reinvent my craft, other districts. But I think what is really important as well is reach out to other teachers in your building, not just in our field. Because I think it was Maurice saying having challenges with the classroom management. And that was the number one thing I faced my first year, and I still face now. I think I'm a little bit better at it, on handling it. But I was lucky. I come from a family of teachers. My dad is a year away from retiring. He's junior high. My mother retired. She's a kindergarten teacher. I'd always pick their brains. Whenever I'm having a difficult time with a student of mine, I often hold the classroom teacher back, or I go to them at the end of the day, and I'm just like, hey, do you notice anything going on with so-and-so? Maybe it was just today. Maybe they're in a bad mood in the classroom today. Maybe something's going on at home. Hey, I'm having a difficult time with handling this situation in class. Are you seeing it in your classroom? And what tips can you give me, that help you handle with that management? How do you handle that? How can I bring that to my gymnasium? So just talking about a support system, I think the more communication and relationships you build with your building, and working with those people and being a complete team, I think you get the most out of your teaching and your kids.
Great stuff, Joe. That's impressive. And I think it speaks to, in an indirect way, some of the interdisciplinary concepts that were discussed in the article. But more importantly, making connections, trying to build relationships with students, right? Maybe there's students that don't excel in PE, but they excel in other subjects, right? So, and then how can you bring that subject in to maybe to inspire, back to Sarah's point, to inspire that child to now want to be motivated and engaged in PE? And conversely, the opposite. Maybe there are students that don't excel in other classrooms, but in PE, they do very, very well. And so those relationships with the students can be nurtured and obviously cultivated by making sure that you take on an interdisciplinary approach, not only from the standpoint of curricular planning, but networking with your teachers to make sure that the experience is, maximized for sure. Go ahead, Sarah.
Yeah, I love interdisciplinary lessons. I actually like to challenge myself to think about how I can do that more. And I'm actually really looking forward to my unit in April. And this is a really good example of how my school and my department and my grade team kind of stepped out of our own box to work together. So in April, we are planning to do mini golf. And my challenge to the kids is to build your own mini golf course. And I have been like the cardboard box lady, just hoarding them in my office. Don't come in unless you want to see a mess. But they're going to be building them, and they're going to be learning the dynamics, and we're going to be working with the 9th grade physics teacher. And they've been talking about Newton's laws, and they've been talking about the degrees of a ramp, and if you want things to go up a level, and just the dynamics. And also we're including the geometry teacher now. We have a meeting next week to talk about how we can include physics, geometry, and phys ed into this one unit. And I have one student in particular who has low motivation because he's self-conscious in gym. And I told him, I was like, well, guess what? We get to build things. We get to do mini golf. And I showed him pictures, and he's like, I am actually really looking forward to this. And I look forward to the day in a few weeks when he gets to have his hands on a box and starts molding it and making it his own. And it's going to be a great day. Yeah. So I look forward to that.
Awesome stuff.
Yeah. Go ahead, Don.
So I wanted to kind of touch upon two quick points. What got me prepared in my career, honestly, is my first year of teaching. And I had a student teaching experience that was the complete end on both ends of the spectrum. I spent my mornings at a high school and my afternoons at an elementary school. And then in the late afternoons, I had to coach. And I had a very positive experience at the elementary and not a very positive experience at the high school. And, you know, student teaching, it was fine. But when I got hired as a teacher, I was hired as a part-timer first. And I constantly nitpicked and picked the brains of two amazing veteran teachers that were in my school who were polar opposites. One was very fun-loving and energetic and humorous. And the other one was very stoic and almost by the book. And I learned a ton from both of them. And so for me, that was a big thing. Second thing I want to bring up real quick has to do with ongoing training. And so I, you know, being that I'm in my 25th year, to let everybody know, learning never ends. I'm constantly learning something new. I attend conferences, which are completely invaluable to me. I always pick up something from a conference. Through my own school district, I am taking courses. We have something called TTTs, which are teachers teaching teachers. And my colleagues across the district, whether it's physical education or not, we do book talks. There are things with social emotional learning, students of special populations, you name it, you know, and it's more than just, oh, I'm going to take classes to up my salary. It's really, do I want to be the type of teacher that's doing the same stuff for 25 years? Or do I want to be somebody that's constantly growing and changing my craft? Because a lot of it is on perspective. Wouldn't I think I even put that in one of my my Twitter tips, is that I want not only people to know that I truly care about the kids, but I care about my craft and teaching as well. And that you're always growing. I am constantly growing. I am not the same teacher I was 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago. And so I think for newer teachers, once you get your master's degree, your learning does not end, and it really should continue, and that will make you a much, much better teacher.
Impressive, Mr. Tobin. And I was going to say to you that you are a guest host on the show today. So you are wearing the proverbial headphones and holding the proverbial mic. So anytime that you have a question that you want to ask, you've got the floor to do so. So remember. Well,
I'm going to do that right now. So okay. For all the younger teachers that are there, what is your plan? What is your long-term plan once you have tenure and you have your master's degree? Like, what are you expecting to do as you move on?
Hope I didn't stump you. I see some state leaders here and some zone leaders here. I don't want to, I'm sorry. I don't want to, you know.
That's a good one, yes. Get involved in leadership at New York State AFID or your zone level. That's a great idea, absolutely.
Joe, did you want to add?
Just to acknowledge that that's a really good question, because like I always want to grow as a teacher. This is my fourth year. This is my 10-year year. And my father, when I was graduating high school, he would say, you have to have a 5-year plan. And it's funny. It's like I'm just like the wheels are turning. It's just hitting me now. It's like, what's your 5-year plan for your career? Like, well, how do you want to evolve every like 5 year, where do you want to be in 5 years? And once you get there, where do you want to be in the next 5 years? I think that's a wicked question. And like, I'm just like thinking out loud, because it was in the article, but this is something I want to do, because I found through my experience just growing up as a kid in PE, but then also as a teacher, PE can be hit or miss for a lot of kids. I think the younger levels just love it. Like, you're like a god to them. And then once they get a little bit older, I think the athletes really thrive in PE, but some kids might kind of shy away from it. And it's about finding that, I bring it back a lot of the times to lifelong fitness. What can we do here in class throughout the year to kind of have you take something away from PE? Like, I'm kind of rambling, but I just don't want to teach the, hey, we're going to do soccer this unit, and then we're going to do football, and then we're going to do floor hockey. And so if I can find a unit where it like promotes this physical activity and enjoyment and so when they get older, like it's something as simple as my fourth graders, they took a school field trip to Mount Joe. They do it in all three seasons, fall, winter, and spring. And that's like, I tell my kids that all the time. I remind them, like, once you get out of high school and college, if you find a way to stay physically active by just going for a walk or a hike and finding enjoyment in just activity, I think that's that's one of my main goals as a PE teacher. And I would love to find a way to do some research and build up my inventory to promote that in my curriculum moving forward. That's one way I would love to grow as a teacher.
I love it, Joe. Longitudinal data about physical literacy. There you go. Dr. Ramsey, we've got a willing practitioner that might help us with this new venture.
Sounds like a plan, man. That's awesome. Sounds like a plan.
Yeah. Logan, did you want to add something?
Yeah. So to kind of answer Don's question as well, one of the things for me, once I get my tenure, is to take more chances with things. Mm. And I feel like that's a big thing as a phys ed teacher. Like, you have all these ideas in your head, but you're like, oh, will it work? And that's one of the things, whether we want to admit it or not, like, we're more willing to do once we know we kind of have, you know, we have that tenure, we have that experience where, and I'm very lucky. I'm in a district where my principal is very supportive. Anytime I've gone to her with an outlandish idea, which is somewhat frequent, she's like, well, okay, give it a try. Sometimes the attorney say it's a liability, you know, slip and slide outside, this and that. But usually she's on board. It's someone else that might say no later on. So for me, I think just the ability to take more chances. And I would also like to kind of tie into this, what we were just talking about in terms of cross-curricular. So again, I'm at a district where my principal is extremely supportive. She's actually retiring this year, so it's going to be a new one beginning next year. But I'm in a building that's pre-K to two with a lot of staff that are nearing retirement. And I will say that for me specifically, I have many teachers who I go to and I ask ideas. And there are a few who don't really want anything to do with it. They just want to stick to what they're teaching, their math, their literacy. They don't care if I include it in phys ed. So there are quite a few in the building that are like that. So just to make sure we're being realistic, and we already talked about environments, obviously everybody's dealing with a different one. I do have teachers in the district as well in my specific building who, you know, have been here 3, 5, 8 years, and they're very enthusiastic about getting involved and, you know, making some cross-curricular things kind of work. But for me, it's mostly been the other special area teachers. Music and I, we do 3 or 4 things together, you know, throughout the fall and winter, you know, ice skating and different things like that. But I think that that's one thing for me specifically, once I receive my tenure, is just to be able to take more chances, you know, ask more advice from people that, you know, might have told me no in the past. Hey, I want to try this again. Can we get together and do this? And kind of be able to, you know, just be more confident in addressing some of those things.
Well said. Yeah. Don, your question also, I just wanted to add that someone, when I was teaching, my principal came in and identified me and said, hey, I want you to be the dean. I became an assistant principal. Guess what? I paid that forward by having one of our amazing phys ed teachers present her first workshop in New York City. Guess what? She's now a principal in a school district. Wow. So this is, we're talking about leadership and identifying talent. So great question. And we have some people right in this panel that will be part of that. Indeed.
Excellent.
I agree. Sarah, did you have something you wanted to add?
Sure.
It's okay. No worries.
It's okay.
Okay.
It's all right. I just mentioned in the chat that I think once I do get my tenure, or even before I get my tenure, I would like to get my 30 and above in admin and gain my admin license.
Oh, great.
As well as be a co-op for any incoming student teacher. I have had the pleasure of actually starting with a co-op this spring, and I love being a teacher to a teacher and just opening, you know, his eyes and trying new things. And also, I think once I get tenure and I stay at that school, I would really like to create more opportunities for that community to bridge and create a better relationship between the school and the members of that area.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Beautiful, Sarah. I love it. Okay, well, I can't let Mr. Tobin ask the only good question here. So I've got one here. So hopefully Joe and others alike will find this equally engaging. What advice do you have for new HPE professionals entering the profession? So you're newly inducted. What advice do you have for the new cohort coming through? And better yet, what about high school students that are just about to finish and pondering a career as an HPE teacher? Go ahead, Alyssa, go, please.
My first instinctual answer is don't be afraid to make mistakes. And I know I kind of touched on that earlier, but making mistakes is part of life. And, you know, as a new teacher, it's also expected. Like when I first got to this building, I used to beat up on myself all the time. Like, I can't do this, or I can't, you know, they're not listening, or they're like, my method isn't working. And, you know, I would talk to other people and they would say, well, did you try this? And well, that would be my second point. Don't be afraid to ask questions and talk to other people. Because, you know, we all have this kind of perspective on life, and, you know, we working together to establish different methods and different circumstances is how we are successful in life.
Excellent, Alyssa. I think Logan has his hand up. Go ahead, Logan.
So I was fully prepared for this question, Dr. Seymour. I typed out an answer. So, I mean, there's a lot of advice that we could give. One of the things I just spoke about was there are some teachers in my building that don't necessarily want to work for cross-curricular type things. Well, guess what? There are other teachers that will. And if you don't ask, if you get shot down by that first teacher, that second teacher, and you're like, no one wants to do anything. Well, no, those two teachers don't. So ask questions, use resources. The number one thing that popped into my head when you asked the question was it's worth it. It's worth it. I think that's the main takeaway is yes, there's going to be hard days. There's going to be hard students. There's going to be hard co-workers, hard administrators, but as long as you realize that your students and what you're teaching them is what matters, you do right by them, everything else will fall into place. A big thing for me is assessment. Assess yourself. We spend all our time teaching and assessing our students. Who's assessing us? Record your lessons. Have other phys ed teachers in your district come in. Have somebody from your BOCES come in. Have an administrator come in. Have a different special area. And the other thing is on your free time, if you're not actively lesson planning, go to a classroom, watch their literacy lesson. Maybe they don't want to give you something to include in your curriculum. Well, go and take it then. Take a notebook, sit in the back and take notes. I love observing other educators. I love team teaching when somebody's able to. I've taught phys ed classes with a library resource teacher in here helping me, with an art teacher, with a music teacher, because I'm the only phys ed teacher in my building. So I have to kind of use other people. And I think that's something that has really taught me a ton in my first couple of years. And the other thing that I know Joe could probably speak to as well is just be involved. Be very involved, whether it's coaching, running after school programs, before school programs, a morning activity before the bell rings, giving teachers brain breaks, communicating with PT and OT if they're in your building, talking to the nutritionists, the cooks in the cafeteria, the nurses. Just be around, be seen, make sure that you're available, and, you know, take that constructive criticism, but don't be afraid to give it. You know, be involved with everybody you can. And I understand as a new teacher, you might not want to coach. You might want to focus on your teaching. That's fine. But maybe you volunteer. Maybe you go to practice once a week or twice a week and you get to know some of the high school students, even though you're teaching at the middle school. So there are different ways to get involved and different things that you can do. But the main thing for me is it's worth it. Use your professional developments. Use AFERD. Use teachers in your building, use people in your district, your BOCES, reach out, ask questions, always get better every day. Success isn't owned, it's leased, right? Rent's due every day. What'd you do today to pay your rent?
Wow. That sounds like a culturally responsive educator talking right there. I don't know if you could top that, Don, nor Clancy. Yeah,
There's a couple of proverbs in there for sure.
I'm telling you.
Yeah, trademark some of those.
I'm telling you,
there, Logan. Wow,
that was an excellent answer.
You were listening in assessment class. I could see for sure, right?
My goodness.
I think he definitely heard everything. Wow, impressive.
Take a stand.
So what about high school students? What do we have? Have any of you come across high school students that you think, wow, he or she's got the got the goods to be a great HPE teacher. Don, go ahead.
Yeah, I want to be like you.
In my district, we have something called the WISE internship. And I have a WISE student right now. She is a high school senior who got accepted to go to Keene State. And she's going to be majoring to be a physical education teacher. And it was great that the district that I'm in, they're allowing their students an externship, internship. I don't know the correct term. I think it's externship. But she spends her afternoons getting credit in my gym. And I give her a little bits of taste of what it would be like to be a PE teacher. She doesn't just assist me. I've allowed her a chance to speak to the kids. In fact, soon she's going to be not taking over, but she's going to get a chance to introduce an activity or help with something in my class. Having a high school kid with a site visit is a great way to do it. You know, I mean, not all districts or high schools necessarily will do what a child is looking for. So it's a good way to put themselves out there, like on a career day or something along the lines of, hey, this is something I think I'm interested in. I want to go do a site visit from maybe it's their own school, maybe it's their cousin's school or a neighboring district or whatever, just to see what other people are doing.
Hey, Don, as a member of Shape America Recruitment and Retention Task Force, I'd be interested in knowing more about that program, that high school connection you're talking about resources, Don. Thank you.
Yeah.
Clancy.
Anyone else regarding that?
I'll add on.
Go ahead.
I think for both teachers and high school students or prospective students, I think it's really important to learn how to find a balance. I think too many times we are overworking ourselves or overconsuming ourselves and not finding the balance between professionalism and personal life. So I think just always being considerate of yourself and knowing that you're a human and knowing that even if you don't get everything done in one day, you still have tomorrow. So just looking forward to the work that can be accomplished in your time and then, doing the rest the next day. So again, finding balance within your life. Like Logan said, reaching out, and I wrote some other points down too, engaging with the content. So we have not only our state standards, but we have scope and sequence, and especially scope and sequence for health has helped me as a first year health teacher in navigating, well, how do I want to pace myself and what do I want to do? And a lot of times my kids are like, well, what are we learning? What units are we going to have? And I have my scope and sequence posted right there. And I was like, okay, as you can see, we did this, this is next. So they get a visual representation of what they're learning and they're able to connect that. And then they're also able to prepare for that. And a lot of my students, they're like, oh, well, can I do a lesson on nutrition? And I was like, yeah, like you can definitely help me plan and you can definitely, be my co-teacher. I also think making real life connections is really important. So for example, I wasn't able to take my kids to the grocery store, but I was able to steal about 200 circulars from the grocery store. And now they are cutting it out and they're going to glue it and meal prep basically with a budget of like $50. So I think just making real life connections is really important. And for the people who are looking to make this as a career choice, I think it's a really important question to ask yourself why. So why do you want to do this? And can you answer your why? And even if that why changes, let it be consistent and let it be present, because you need to love your job in order to do your job. So I think just always being able to answer your why do you want to do this?
Impressive, Sarah. That why question and providing student ownership and accountability, that really speaks to the meaningful PE framework that's out there now currently too. So I think all students want to know why. And when they know why, they're much more likely to be engaged, right? So very important. Excellent. So I think Logan speaks to a similar program as well, where that Mr. Tobin mentioned, where he took part in an internship towards the end of his high school tenure. Logan, you want to share real quick and then we'll move on?
Sure. Yeah. So my senior year, I was like many seniors and I had a little bit of senioritis. So I didn't exactly have a full schedule of classes that I was taking. So what I did was I actually got to leave and go home at 12:30. So our school day went until 2:30, but I was done 2 hours early. Part of that, though, was two periods with no class. So what I decided to do was I talked to the elementary phys ed teachers because they were teaching. I was taking an athletic training and a personal training class, one each semester, with the elementary phys ed teachers, came to the high school and taught them. So through that relationship that I had built with them, I asked if I could come over and help out with their phys ed program. So naturally, they loved it. They jumped at the idea, and I ended up going over there every single day. So every day that I was in school from probably like October through the end of the school year, I was over at the elementary school for around an hour and a half helping with the phys ed classes. And to me, that was where it all began. I saw the interactions with the students. I saw how much they cared. And I mean, that's why we're all here, right? Because we had that one teacher, coach, somebody in our life that guided us in this direction. And for me, that was where it started. So hearing Don talk about something like that was just awesome to me, because that is why I am where I am, is because of a program like that. Now, my school didn't have a specific program. It just had a teacher, and Dr. Seymour, you know her, Mary. It just had a teacher who, you know what, I think that this. And so she kind of nurtured me and pushed me in the right direction. And now here I am.
Wow. Inspiring indeed, Logan. Wow.
That is awesome.
I think you're absolutely spot on. We've all had those moments, those teachable moments, and better yet, inspirational moments that have, you know, pushed us or nudged us or encouraged us to move in this direction.
And mentors.
Yes. And mentors indeed. Okay. So we're running kind of low on time, so we're going to go into our speed round, Dr. Ramsey and Mr. Tobin. We're going to go into our speed round for our panelists. One word answer. Everybody has to answer. What is the most rewarding part of teaching right now, your current teaching environment? Or teaching itself, being a health and physical education teacher, what is the most rewarding part of it thus far? Can you give me a one word answer? We'll give you a couple of Jeopardy seconds, and I'll let Dr. Ramsey do the sound. Who wants to go first? Anyone?
And we'll do the tag again. Let's do the tag again. Quickly. Go. Alyssa's on. Go.
Growth.
Tag.
Great. Excellent. Joe.
Relationships.
I love it.
Tag.
Oh, Logan.
Smiles.
I love it.
And Sarah.
Impact.
Is that? I think that's anyone else. I'll let Dr. Ramsey and Mr. Tobin think of a word. I'll add to the conversation, and I'm sure you already know what I'm going to say, but I'm going to say journey.
Love. Don, take us home.
Well, we can't forget about Mo.
Oh, Mo.
Go ahead, Mo. Everyone took my answers. I was definitely going to say relationship and smiles, and love was my last one. So. But I think definitely relationships for me. Relationships are the best one.
That sounds great.
For me, kids.
Awesome. Couldn't say it any better. Well, let's bring her home, Dr. Ramsey. What do you think?
Yes, this was amazing. This was amazing, I'd say the least. I grew some more. I got smarter. Yes.
All right. So on behalf of New York State AFER, we'd like to thank our panel of newly minted HPE teachers, and of course, our esteemed special guest host, Mr. Don Tobin, for joining us today. We can see, obviously, the profession is in great hands. Very, very lucky. This session will be posted on the New York State AFER website and on our podcast channel. Stay tuned for new and exciting episodes, scheduled later in the spring.
Please visit us on NewYorkStateAFER.org, social media handles at New York State AFER, or call us at 315-825-1015 for more information. Please also take note of our many professional development events and programs throughout the year, including our annual state conference at the Turning Stone Casino in Verona, New York, each year in November. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, everybody.
Today.
Thank you.
Bye.